Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Everyone, you're listening to All About Healing. I'm your host, Emily Francis. Tonight's show is going to be slightly different. I had guest Jim Willis to come back for our second interview after he was on just a few weeks ago. He wrote a book on the afterlife, and we had a glorious conversation, so much so that I invited him back sooner than I would invite most guests, and he was scheduled for tonight's show. However, very surprisingly, he passed away this week, and I wanted to keep the replay of his original show for tonight's show in his honor. I think, especially when I scroll social media and people post some of the most devastating things, and for a moment you're sad, and then you sort of keep scrolling, and I don't want that for Jim. I don't want to just replace and put a different show on. So in his honor, with love, with all due respect, this is the replay of Jim Willis. Happy Wednesday, everyone. You're listening to All About Healing. I'm your host, Emily Francis, and we have the fabulous producer, Jay, on the line, who makes this show go around. Today, so we pre-record, so you're going to hear this next week, but today is May 1st, and here in Malta, it is a public holiday, and the world is partying in the capital city of Valletta to be thankful, and they're interviewing ambulance drivers and police and all these people to thank them for their services and teach the world what goes on behind the scenes of carers, health carers, and things like that. So today is it's the Workers' Day, and everybody's giving thanks. So it's a pretty cool opportunity in our country here in Malta to just kind of reflect and to have the day open and just look around a little bit more, slow down. And I'm really grateful that living in the Mediterranean, we have a lot more days off than we used to have in the United States. So I always like to celebrate and to kind of connect where I can with the parts of nature and of people and what I can bring in. Now, today's guest, we have Jim Willis on the line, and he has written many, many books. But today, we're talking about his newest book, which is Near-Death Experiences, Afterlife Journeys and Revelations. And before I even give his background, I have to say this is one of my most, I just love it. I love this conversation. I love speaking with people that have studied this, who've been involved in these circles, and that you can enter into a conversation where you're not crazy when you have some of these thoughts and beliefs and interests and all of that. So, Jim, thank you so much for being here, and I cannot wait to dive in.
Oh, thank you. Good to be with you, Emily. I must confess, I'm still trying to get my head around the fact that I'm here on the East Coast of the United States. You're in Malta. Jay is bringing us together in California, and somehow we're having this conversation live. If you had told me this 30 years ago, I would have said you were crazy.
Isn't that amazing?
I love it. I can't believe it.
There's so much now. You know, it is. It's really good. And I live now in the Mediterranean, but when I started hosting this show, I lived in Atlanta, Georgia. So I was on the East Coast.
Oh, really?
And yes, I moved here from Atlanta in 2020.
We were practically neighbors.
Here.
You were just about 2 hours
Where
away
are you?
From me. I'm in South Carolina.
Where were you? Oh, that's right. You know what? When I saw that you live in the woods in South Carolina, my gem and stone teacher lived in the woods right off South Carolina, off exit 1, right from Georgia into South Carolina.
Oh, that's very close to where I am.
That's amazing. That, yeah. I used to go there and just have healing days all day and lose all track of time. And it was so magical, just really magical. And there's something really beautiful about the energy right there in South Carolina.
Yeah, there is. I came here 16 years ago. I retired and came out here. I built a house in the woods. And my object was to go on a one-year retreat. And that was 16 years ago, and I'm still here. It's just it's an energy that I just can't possibly explain. There's ley lines, you know, energy lays running right through the property. Matter of fact, I'm sitting in one right now, as I talk to you, and it's an ancient place where ancient people used to come to make their stone tools and things because it was an old quarry. And we find all kinds of gardening tools and projectile points and this and that and the other thing. It's just it's magical.
It is a magical place, and I miss those days going to South Carolina. And he lived off the beaten path, really far down the gravel road, and then he grew all these amazing things and had these fairy circles, and it was such a it was such a healing place for me, and I would bring my dog and his dog, and we would just do massive amounts of healing, and it was
wonderful.
Just the coolest. So
yeah.
I want to read Jim's author a bio.
Oh, okay.
Jim Willis earned his master's degree in theology from Andover Newton Theological School. He's been ordained minister for over 40 years. He's taught college courses in comparative religion and cross-cultural studies. His background in theology and education led him to writing more than 20 books on history, religion, the apocalypse, cross-cultural spirituality, and the mysteries of the unknown. So now we're in this newest, latest book, Near-Death Experiences, Afterlife Journeys, and Revelations. So will you take me back? Because to do this kind of study takes something happened that made you want to do all that you do. So can you take me to that crossroads that made you take this path?
Absolutely. This book is kind of a sequel to a book that I wrote called The Quantum Akashic Field. It's about out-of-body experiences that I began to have about 15, 16 years ago, something like that. And but it is not just a sequel. This particular book, well, I have to let a deep dark secret out of the bag. A lot of books are written because a publisher calls you up and says, "We want a book on such and such, and here's your advance check." And that really helps get the ball rolling. But mostly though, this book isn't like that, because I 50 years ago, it was in the 1970s, the early 1970s, I was fresh out of school. And I was a pastor of my first church, and I was, you know, playing music and teaching and doing all this kind of stuff. And in your 20s, you remember what it's like. Most of us knew everything. We had all the answers. And it was just one of those things where I was really expecting that I really had life pretty well figured out. Well, I was asked to visit this woman. In the book, I call her Hannah. She was an older lady, just a wonderful, wonderful person. And she was in the hospital, and I was told that she probably was not going to come out of the hospital. She was very close to death, but you wouldn't know it talking to her. And I would go to see her, and I knew that she was a member of the church, and I knew that she loved the old hymns of the church, so I got into the habit of taking along my guitar with me, and I would sing the old Rugged Cross or In the Garden or some of those songs, and she would kind of try to sing along, and sometimes the nurses would wheel other patients into the room, and we'd have a little song fest going. And I hate to say that it was fun, because what caused us to do this was that Hannah was close to death, but it really was. It was uplifting. She wouldn't let anybody be down in her presence. And this particular day, which happened to be the last day I saw her alive, on this particular day, I was putting my guitar away, and she looked at me and she said, "Now, who did you bring with you this time?" And I said, sorry, Hannah, it's just me all by myself. And she looked at me like she knew something that I didn't. And she said to me, oh, I know, they're usually drawn by the music. Well, it never occurred to me that music is vibration, and vibration has effects with different supernatural forces and all this kind of thing. And I didn't put it together. And she said, usually after you're gone, that's when they come through the portal. And I was surprised by her use of the word portal. I've always called it a door. I knew that in some places of the world they call it a portal, but it didn't make any sense. Hannah never had talked this way before. So I looked out in the hallway. I could see out the doorway. She couldn't. But I could see out the doorway. I was standing at the foot of her bed, and nobody was there. And so I said, they come through the portal. And she said, yeah, they'll come through after you're gone. The music attracts them. Well, I didn't want to make her uncomfortable, so I said, oh, well, that's great, Hannah. Thank you. I'll see you next time. And I packed up the guitar, and off I went. Well, I got to out to the nurse's station, and I said to the head nurse on that floor, what was Hannah talking about? Who do I bring with me? And they come through the portal. And she said, oh, they've been doing that lately. She's been talking that way lately. I think she's probably just getting very close to the end. Well, this was back in the 70s, and people weren't paying attention to near-death experiences back then. This was before Raymond Moody has written his famous book in 1975, Life After Life, where he coined the term near-death experience. Well, this was back in 1972 or 3, so we still didn't even have the term near-death experience in our vocabulary yet. Well, I couldn't forget what she had said, and certainly the next day when she passed away, and I was asked by her family to lead her memorial service. I took my guitar and I sang in the garden or something like that. And but I never forgot that. And then 50 years later, after I had heard her use that word, portal, I had already retired now from ministry, and a couple from my old church came. And they were visiting me, and he told me that his mother had passed away. And I said, well, I had heard that. I knew that. And he said, she said something very, very strange when she died. And I said, well, what was that? And she asked me who I had brought with me. And I said, oh, boy, who you have brought with you? And then she said, yes, after you leave, they sometimes come through the portal. Those two incidents, 50 years apart, made me look back on my life and realize how much of it I had wasted because I thought I was on top of it. I thought I knew all these things. I was a very left brain, intellectual, systematic theologian, and I thought I had all this stuff in my head, but I began to look back on all the times I had been there when someone passed away. When they died, and then sometimes they came back and they told me, and sometimes even before they died, they said, oh, look, there is so-and-so standing at the foot of the bed, a loved one or someone like that. Or they told me about seeing the light or going through the tunnel. And I realized that all of this time, I had bought into that that left brain scientific understanding that says, oh, when the brain begins to shut down, the neurons stop firing, and they don't, the electronic impulses don't stimulate hormones, and the brain begins to shut down, and we think we're in a tunnel and all that. And I had just thought about that, which was really kind of silly, because all of this time I had been the pastor of a church, and every Christmas we would stand up and sing something like, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, Glory to the Newborn King. And what's that song about? Oh, angels we have beheld on high. What was that song about? It was about interdimensional beings coming over. Oh, we would call them spirits or angels or whatever, coming from a different dimension into our reality and producing vibration, producing songs to bring a message. We were singing about it all along, and I never really accepted it. And I look back, and sometimes I'm so ashamed of myself, I can hardly see straight. But those two incidents together and all the stuff that happened in between said to me, and plus the out-of-body experiences that I've been having. I've never had a near-death experience in that I've never died, but I have had a lot of out-of-body experiences where I think I've surveyed the same landscape. And as a result, I find myself saying, I have to write this book. And so when the publisher called me and said, can we do a book on death experiences, I said, yep, and I jumped right into it.
You know what's amazing to me is the leap, because there are the people that I try to keep close to my heart are the people that have a faith background of some sort and then became really open. And it's like my friend's a minister also, and she was always quoting the Bible. She grew up in this really small Georgia town, and she went to Bible college, and she just kept, you know, quoting these things. And the teacher said to her, show me in the Bible the stories you're telling. And it turns out she couldn't find them, and she realized how much had been fed to her as gospel, as this is the only way. And it isn't even in the actual Bible. It's like they had it. I don't even know what they did. But it's people. I need people like that in my life that started on a path to figure out what their heart and their soul and their faith really dictates, not because you've been told this is how to believe. And I actually went to college at Jacksonville State in Alabama, right down the street from Raymond Moody. He was in Anniston, Alabama. And I never went and met him, but I was there in the 90s, and he was too. He was in practice there. And as an adult now, I look back with such regret, because my spiritual awakening started when I was 23 in college, the end of college. By the time I heard his name, it was like, I'm gone from there. But I do think it's something profound, a minister, a person of your faith, of your teaching and learning, to finally look bigger and go, wow, there is so much more out there. But it takes that experience, because how do you contend with people that are, I mean, you're from the South, I'm from the South, people just shut it down. And how do you, like, do you contend with it, or you just say, hey, I'm just going to go find my people and not worry about it, or... Like, what is
that? Well, I haven't really had to contend with it much, because I came out here to get away from everybody, and I pretty much did. I mean, I still have the Reverend in front of my name, but I haven't set foot in a church for 16 years, and the people that I talk to are people such as yourself, or we talk long distance or something like that, you know, over the internet or doing radio shows or podcasts or something like that. When I went into ministry, I was a real seeker. I wanted to know. And I had this kind of misguided idea that if I became the pastor of a church, I would join a community of like-minded people, and we would then proceed to grow together spiritually and tackle the big questions of life. It doesn't work that way. When you become the pastor of a church, you become the CEO of a small company. And you have to worry about budgets, you have to worry about buildings, and you have to worry about attendance, and you have to get ready for this next meeting, or this trustees meeting, or deacons meeting, or this or that. You have to get ready for the next church service. And you're always having people come and people go, and you're always being a part-time counselor and a teacher and all this kind of stuff. Pretty soon 40 years goes by, and I found myself at the ripe old age of 62, when I could first sign up for Social Security, I said, "You know what? I'm not going to wait. I've got to do this now." So I moved out here to the woods on a mission. I was going to go on a year-long retreat, and I was going to wrestle with God. I don't use the word God quite as much as I used to now, because it's such a loaded word. It has so much baggage to it that when I say the word God and other people say the word God, sometimes they think that I'm talking about the God that, you know, they understand. And I'm usually not. So I like to use the word source. But I wanted to come out here and wrestle with source. I really did. I even had a Bible verse in my mind. I had that story from the Old Testament book of Genesis when Jacob and Esau had gone their separate ways, and Jacob was now coming back to be, reconciled with his brother Esau. And they were going to meet the next day, and Jacob didn't know what was going to happen. And he was up, like we all are when we're worried, wandering at night back and forth on his, him on his side of the river and Esau on his side of the river. And Jacob, crazy, crazy thing. Jacob met this man and wrestled with him. And as the dawn broke, it turned out that he had been wrestling with God all night. And he said, I will not let you go until you bless me. And that was the Bible verse that I had in my mind. I said, I'm going to move out there to the woods. I'm not going to see people for days on end, sometimes weeks on end. I'm going to meditate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, just you and me, God. I will not let you go until you bless me. And sure enough, God answered my prayer. It didn't come to me through Christianity. It came to me instead through probably the oldest religion known to humankind, and it's shamanism. And but I met the spirit who I was wrestling with. If we have time, I have to tell you a short follow-up to this story. A number of years ago, I was asked to go to Cornwall in the UK and give a talk to a group called the Parallel Community about the commonalities of world religions and the roots of world religions. So I'd never been to England before, and I went, and I had a wonderful time with those folks. But I couldn't leave England without doing one thing. I had to get in the car and learn how to drive on, to me, what was the wrong side of the road.
Right.
And met my first English roundabout, they called them, and that was a harrowing experience. And I had to drive up to this little town called Fenny Compton, which is up northwest of London. And the reason I had to go there was there is an old church there where my great-great-great-great ancestors used to preach. They were clergy in the Church of England. And I went up there, had a wonderful time, saw the town, met the town historian who let me into the church, and I was able to walk up into the very pulpit where my great-great-ancestor used to preach. And there in that pulpit, I looked across the sanctuary, and I could see the stained glass window, which he had looked at every time he preached. And lo and behold, it was the depiction of Jacob wrestling with God, saying, I will not let you go until you go.
Oh, wow.
Now, how his spiritual DNA was passed on through the generations and wound up with me. But it was really quite
that.
A time. It was really quite a time.
You know, I'm a big believer in genetic codes being passed down through our DNA. Really big believer in it. We got to take a quick commercial break, but we're going to pick up exactly where we left off. We have Jim Willis on the line with us, and we'll be right back.
Emily A. Francis's new book, The Taste of Joy, Mediterranean Wisdom for a Life Worth Savoring, is all about heartfelt hints on attaining the most healthiest, fun, and inspiring life. By adding a bit of the Mediterranean lifestyle into your life, you'll explore the wisdom of eating mindfully, seasonally, and locally, as well as discover Mediterranean family secrets to health and happiness. And it's all in The Taste of Joy. Get your copy today at Amazon.com or visit EmilyAFrancisBooks.com.
Now there's hope for authentic healing. A new book by Emily A. Francis, Whole Body Healing, Create Your Own Path to Physical, Emotional, Energetic, and Spiritual Wellness, can help you discover a deeper way to approach your healing instead of using just the usual mainstream medical single methods. With Whole Body Healing and its extensive background of research, you'll be able to create your own healing path to achieve true and lasting results. Pre-order Whole Body Healing now at Amazon.com. You won't want to miss this priceless information. Whole Body Healing at Amazon.com by Emily A. Francis.
ASMC, the premier German company that supplies everything for adventure, from outdoor clothes to outdoor gear, even backpacks. Lots of quality and lots of specials. To start your adventure, go to HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ASMC.
You may never totally understand this man-woman emotional connection thing, but now you can understand your muscles' emotional connection in regards to your health. That's right, your muscles have an emotional connection. And if you want an easy-to-use blueprint to understand your muscles' emotion, then get Emily A. Francis's book, The Body Heals Itself. It helps you activate and heal your muscles on an emotional level. So indeed, The Body Heals Itself. Plus, it's filled with tools you can use immediately. Find out more at EmilyAFrancisBooks.com. Buy The Body Heals Itself now.
When you need a positive point of view, turn to HealthyLife.net, your 24/7 radio network for a better future.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to All About Healing. If you're just tuning in, or you're tuning in for the first time because you love our guest, Jim Willis, then I invite you to return. And my name is Emily Francis, and it has been 6 years that I've been hosting this show on Healthy Life Radio. So I'm very grateful for the opportunity, and I'm grateful for you to come and spend your time. And I hope you enjoy the guests. And if you have guests or ideas that you want for the show, don't be afraid to reach out to the radio station and get through to me and message me, because I'm here and I'm excited to expand and see what it is for healing and what that means to you. Now, Jim, I live in Malta, as I've already said, and Malta has cities here that predate Christ himself. It is an incredibly spiritual country, and it is totally different because it's not an evangelical Catholic country. It's a 98% Catholic country, but it looks nothing like the Catholic religion I knew in America. And here it's a deeply spiritual, they are so into the angels and the saints and the ritual and the evil eyes and the things that Americans get all kinds of creeped out about. And I have to tell you, it feels like my soul has opened up like shutters, because my spiritual awakening became very quote-unquote New Age. And in the southern states, people shame you for that. But I went to school long after and went to the University of Metaphysics to study comparative religion and got my doctorate in it, but then quickly realized nobody takes you seriously because it's not an academic degree. But I still did a thesis and a dissertation, and I studied these comparative religions, and then I lived in a yoga ashram and studied yoga philosophy, and my depth of spirituality became so big that I couldn't confine it. But what I found was that the more evangelical people that I got near, the more shame they like to throw. And I realized it just wasn't worth it to me anymore to try to have a lot of these conversations, because I don't really, I'm not trying to change anybody's mind, but it's really much more valuable to me at this point in my life to share it with people that are already in that space. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. I fully agree. When I wrote Near-Death Experiences, I really wanted to try to find a way to bridge the gap with some of these folks you're talking about. And that's why I wanted to go beyond the idea. I mean, stories of near-death experiences have been with us. The first one I could ever find was recorded by Socrates. That shows how far back they go. But I think it even goes back farther than that. I think when you go to Western Europe, for instance, and you go to those dark, when you go back to those dark painted caves back in Europe, I've got a sneaking suspicion that the shamans were in effect having these out of body experiences, or maybe even near death experiences, and what they were doing is trying to explain what they had seen. And so they would crawl back way underground, and they would paint these magnificent murals in the womb of the earth. And there they would try to say, this isn't necessarily what it is, but it is what it is like, or what it seemed like. And so I think what they were trying to do was to give us an idea of some of these other, what shall we call them? I guess the only thing you can do is call them these entangled visions that they were having, entangled with other dimensions.
Yes, because the Native Americans, they do that. They do soul retrieval. They travel between the worlds. They do shape-shifting. This stuff does go back as old as time. And and those are things that, like, I studied with a couple of peace elders in the Georgia Mountains that their ancestors had given information. And it really is fascinating that there's so many things that are aged that have, that I feel like the new religions glossed over and deleted, conveniently deleted. And then when you actually go and study some of these things, you're sort of the bad guy, really, because you're supposed to just go with what is now. But there's a lot of history there. And if you go wide in your vision and in your studies, you're going to see a different picture.
Yeah. Yeah, we tend to pat ourselves on the back. Our ego takes over, and we tend to like to think that we are more advanced. And in some ways, technologically, I suppose we are more advanced, certainly. But I think that the ancients knew things that we have forgotten. We're living our lives in a kind of kind of amnesia, and we need to recapture that because that's who we are. And we can't figure out who we are if we don't understand the connections that have been going on between the human race and these entities and other dimensions and other realities for as long as there have been humans around.
You know, I could not agree more. And even this is a simple thing, but I think about it a lot. Elizabeth Gilbert, the author of Eat, Pray, Love, she wrote a book called Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear. And one of the things that she talks about is that when you're in a creative space or when you're writing or when you're in that sort of channeled space with spirit, they don't say, back in the Greek times, they didn't say you were a genius. They said you have a genius. That when you're engaged in these artistic capacities, a genius, a spiritual entity comes to you. And they work through the human collaborator to bring the information forth again. And I think that part has gotten so far away from us as a society because somewhere along the line they started saying, you're crazy, if that's the case.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Yeah.
It's just that there is a massive amount of information and spiritual, you're right, entanglement, I mean, overlap of things that are there.
Yeah.
And when
yeah.
you open up to that, and you said it before we started the show, when you have that spiritual awakening, it can change your life.
Yeah, yeah. I get a kick out of the fact that I don't know who first said it, but something about when we talk to God, we're very spiritual. When God talks back to us, we're crazy.
I know exactly. I was about to say that it is. She's on that show with Lily Tomlin. It's a Lily Tomlin quote, and it says, "Why is it when we talk to God, we're spiritual, but when God answers us, we're schizophrenic?"
Yeah, yeah, that's a great way of putting it. That was one of the questions that I wanted to answer when I moved out here to the woods. I was tired of what I called peekaboo religion. These people would say that, oh, I prayed to God, and God somehow, through this convoluted way, gave me a little hint of this or that. And I'm saying, wait a minute, if God can talk to Abraham of old, if God can talk to Isaac and Jacob, why can't God talk to me, you know? And that's when I started dowsing. And after about a year of dowsing for earth energies and that kind of thing, when I discovered that through dowsing, I could actually have conversations with myself on the other side or spirit guide on the other side who was connected here. I'm just on the other side of the Higgs field, that's all. I live on this side of the material fence, but on the other side, of the newly discovered Higgs field, there's the energy that I left there when I came here. And that's what I identified as a particular spirit guide. I call him Sabuko. I won't get into why. But and when I discovered that through dowsing my own bodies, my body was aware of these things, and I could actually have conversations because my body knew things and experienced things that my mind couldn't perceive on that level. And to me, I think that's just absolutely fantastic.
I think that's incredible. And I want to I want to tell people before we go to a commercial break, you can buy Jim's latest book, Near-Death Experiences, Afterlife Journeys and Revelations. It is by Jim Willis, W-I-L-L-I-S. Jim, where can people buy this book?
Well, it's just about wherever books are sold, Amazon and through the publisher and Barnes & Noble and bookstores and even Walmart, I guess you can order it through there. But the easiest way to do it is just to go to my website, which is www.jimwillis.net. And there, all the books are there. All I have to do is click on the cover, and it'll take you right to either Amazon or to the publisher or wherever it's available. Also on that page, there is a contact page where you can send me an email. I would love to hear from anybody who's listening to this conversation right now. We're part of the same community. And so that's probably the easiest way, jimwillis.net.
We're going to take a quick commercial break, but we're picking up right here. We'll be right back.
Trauma or joy, shame or happiness, guilt or empowerment. Let Emily's new book, Healing Ourselves Whole, be the bridge to help you release negative emotions to help you heal on every level to create more joy, more health, and more vitality. Our body knows what we might forget. It's time to rearrange your inner conversation into spectacular health and happiness, and Healing Ourselves Whole is your step-by-step guide. Find out more at emilyafrancisbooks.com and buy Healing Ourselves Whole at Amazon.com now.
Now there's hope for authentic healing. A new book by Emily A. Francis, Whole Body Healing, Create Your Own Path to Physical, Emotional, Energetic, and Spiritual Wellness, can help you discover a deeper way to approach your healing instead of using just the usual mainstream medical single methods. With Whole Body Healing and its extensive background of research, you'll be able to create your own healing path to achieve true and lasting results. Pre-order Whole Body Healing now at Amazon.com. You won't want to miss this priceless information. Whole Body Healing at Amazon.com by Emily A. Francis.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
You may never totally understand this man-woman emotional connection thing, but now you can understand your muscles' emotional connection in regards to your health. That's right, your muscles have an emotional connection. And if you want an easy-to-use blueprint to understand your muscles' emotion, then get Emily A. Francis's book, The Body Heals Itself. It helps you activate and heal your muscles on an emotional level. So indeed, the body heals itself. Plus, it's filled with tools you can use immediately. Find out more at emilyafrancisbooks.com. Buy The Body Heals Itself now.
The Bright Side of Talk, HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back, everyone. We're jumping right back in. We have Jim Willis on the line with us, and we're talking about not necessarily near-death experiences yet. I do want to do that in this section, but mostly about opening your mind into an awareness that maybe everything we've been taught to believe has a deeper depth to it, that it might not only be one story or one specific location of vision into your beliefs. And what I want to ask you before we jump in more into near-death experiences is, as a minister, as a theology major and study, how did you come to a place of peacefulness with contending with what you have studied and acted upon and what you study and act with now?
You know, it's a surprising thing. I still call myself a Christian, even though I'm sure there are many, many Christians out there who think I've lost my faith. But it's my spiritual home. It's where I was raised, and I love the music. I love to listen to Bach cantatas written for the church, or I love to listen to gospel music, you know, that kind of thing too. So, and I've recorded a couple of gospel albums myself, and so I still identify with that. And I'm amazed when people say, doesn't this make you lose your faith? And all I can say is, no, it just brings it new depth. It's all there. It's just in the how we interpret it. And that's why I'm very uncomfortable with the word religion. I much prefer spirituality. To me, spirituality is the essence that's there in the basis of every world religion. But religions, over the years, have a tendency to build fences, to build walls rather than bridges. And I'm absolutely positive that if a Jesus Christ or a Moses or a Mohammed were to come back today, or a Buddha even, were to come back today, they would be amazed at what their followers have done, building these walls of fear and anxiety and all of that kind of thing. I think it's a real shame.
I am so with you on that. Wow, you could not have said that better. I totally agree. And, you know, people forget that Jesus was not a Christian. And Buddha was not a Buddhist. You know, these religious leaders, they didn't go into that saying, here's how you have to do. But people jumped. And I understand it, but I also still believe that it's one God. I still believe, I consider myself a Christian, but I call myself Christian Plus. And I also don't identify with being necessarily religious, although I would lean into the Catholic, and that is where I would. And so, you know, in Malta, it's been really such a blessing, because people are much wider in their awareness of their faith, and they don't really identify the religion. They don't have to go to Mass. Nobody cares or asks you if you go to Mass. It's just a very personal and private practice among people, and I really appreciate that.
I was going to say, isn't it amazing? Step by step, well-meaning, I'm sure, at least mostly well-meaning, we move farther and farther away. I heard a great quote by Bill Gaither just yesterday. Bill Gaither is a gospel music superstar, really, who's written so many wonderful, wonderful songs. And he said something that I thought was extremely meaningful. He said, you know, the closer you get to a microphone, sometimes the farther you get from the truth. And I thought, wow.
Oh, wow.
There it is. There it is. The closer you get to a microphone, the farther you get from the truth. Why? Because our egos take over. And we start to protect our own turf, you know. And it's my way or the highway. The other day I was watching an evangelical preacher from North Carolina who gave a sermon last Sunday that has since gone viral about a new Bible that has just been brought out, and how he believes it's blasphemous because it's uniting the founding documents of the United States along with Scripture. But he was talking about how we've got to get back to love, and he kept mentioning love, and just for the fun of it, I turned off the sound and just watched him. And if I didn't know he was talking about love your neighbor, I could swore he was trying to whip up an army into a frenzy, because he looked angry and his body language was terrible. And yet I turned the sound back on and he'd be talking about, you got to love your neighbor. But he said it with such hatred and fear. And I think that's what religions do. They get us to hatred and fear and be afraid. And it's a terrible thing. I just can't understand how we've got here, and now that we see it seems so obvious to me. I'm wondering why more people don't say no more, let's stop it.
I mean, you are a voice that really, I hope and pray that your books make it out to a much wider circle, because your voice would really be helpful to a lot of people, because I do think that we I remember, I mean, you talking made me remember years ago. I'm a massage therapist, not here in Malta, but for 20 years I was a body worker. Mm-hmm. And I remember working on a woman who asked me if I was a Christian. And I said, yes. But then she started, how are you converting people? And are you knocking on the doors? And are you the... And she was so judgmental. And I said, yeah. You know, this is definitely not the way that I approach, and I'm not religious. No. But I believe in, you know, Jesus and these other, you know, the teachings of Christ and other things. And she's like, that, no, you don't. You're not a Christian. Yeah. Like, she just came at me, and she was like, I don't even want you to touch me. Like, I'm not going to come back to you. I don't believe you're really a Christian. And like, okay, well, if you feel that way, then you certainly, we should be done here, because you're not going to change me. It was really like, you know, it was horrible. Here I am helping your, because I was very clinical in my practice, so I only worked on people that had specific injuries or post-cancer, and so I have very, very specific training that I feel like I won't work on you unless it's me, specifically me, that you need to seek for the knowledge that I have gained. I'm not a person that helps you relax. And it was really insulting, hurtful, shocking, but it was also like, okay, this is the thing that turns me off so deeply. But I do remember I went to the monastery and met with my favorite Trappist monk, Catholic monk, and I said to him, like, I'm not really sure I should go through it, because I went through communion as an adult. And as I started to study more, I said, I'm not really sure that I line up. I'm not sure I should do it. And he said, Emily, it's because you follow the teachings of Christ and not the teachings of the church. And somewhere along the line, those two things became very, very different things.
Yeah. Ever since the Crusades, it seems the voice of the church has been saying, "Kill them in the name of Christ." You know, it's such a shame. Such a shame.
It is, and seeing it now, because now I'm watching the United States. I know which new Bible is out, and now with the American Constitution and all that stuff, and I'm watching all of this hate, and it is gut-wrenching to stand back. There's nothing I could do anyway to change anyone. I learned that a long time ago. You can inspire change. You cannot demand it. And you have to live in your path and your truth, and hopefully people will feed off of that or feel it or want to go into a certain space because you help them realize that God is much deeper inside than it is by the loud voices yelling. Now we got to take our last commercial break, and we're going to come back with Emily's Energy Corner and anything goes here. We have Jim Willis on the line, and we'll be right back.
Emily A. Francis's new book, The Taste of Joy, Mediterranean Wisdom for a Life Worth Savoring, is all about heartfelt hints on attaining the most healthiest, fun, and inspiring life. By adding a bit of the Mediterranean lifestyle into your life, you'll explore the wisdom of eating mindfully, seasonally, and locally, as well as discover Mediterranean family secrets to health and happiness. And it's all in The Taste of Joy. Get your copy today at Amazon.com or visit EmilyAFrancisBooks.com.
Now there's hope for authentic healing. A new book by Emily A. Francis, Whole Body Healing, Create Your Own Path to Physical, Emotional, Energetic, and Spiritual Wellness, can help you discover a deeper way to approach your healing instead of using just the usual mainstream medical single methods. With Whole Body Healing and its extensive background of research, you'll be able to create your own healing path to achieve true and lasting results. Pre-order Whole Body Healing now at Amazon.com. You won't want to miss this priceless information. Whole Body Healing at Amazon.com by Emily A. Francis.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
If you have low vision or are blind, then listen up. There's now high visibility trendy sports clothing available just for you. At AwareWolfGear.com, you'll find attractive, stretchy, warm hoodies, headgear, leggings, even kids' wear to fit the duality of blindness, the need to be seen without drawing needless attention. Check out these trendy clothes for yourself or for someone you know at awarewolfgear.com. That's awarewolfgear.com. Awarewolfgear.com.
Music, information, and friends. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome to Emily's Energy Corner. I am not going to do this by myself because I am too enthralled talking to Jim Willis. This is a conversation that is very near and dear to my heart. I want to jump in to what you remember, what people have shared with you. What do you feel about near-death experiences? What is your perception with all the studies and people you've met? How do you view the dying process?
With great hopefulness and with great joy, believe it or not. And I mostly, if you say something like that today, people think you're being morbid. What can possibly be good about death? The thing that I have come from more than anything else is when I interview people who have had near-death experiences, or in my own case, people who have had out-of-body experiences, the words that they use to try to explain are so hopeful. I hear words like comfort and perfect love and acceptance and empathy. And I have yet to meet the person who has had a near-death experience who wanted to come back. They all came back out of a sense of duty, but none of them said, oh man, I want to go back there. Because where they were was so good. And that's why I try to tell people over and over again, if there's any message I can leave with anybody who listens to this show, it's that when you approach the end of your life, you can do so with absolute confidence and with absolute calmness and with peace, because what you are doing really is just preparing your own way of your own transition. And that's what it is. It's a transition. Death is not an enemy to be feared. It's a transition to be expected, to look forward to. When we go to school, it's a great experience. We gather all this wisdom and everything else, but then what happens? We graduate. Well, it's kind of like a little death, I suppose, because we're leaving a life that we were so familiar with, the idea of classrooms and schools and classmates and all this kind of thing. So in that sense, it's a death. That life is dying. But we're taking that wisdom and we're going out back into the world, and that's a great experience. That's a wonderful thing, and that's really what I kind of see life is. I mean, to me, from what I can understand, and I certainly don't want to start a new religion here. I mean, I'm just saying from my own perspective, it seems to me that we have come from source to come out here to the rim, our perception realm, the material world, to gather experiences. And what do we have to do with those experiences? Well, one of the stages of a near-death experience is what usually called a life review. And that's nothing to dread. Our life is not being reviewed to find out if we're good enough to go on. Of course we are. What it is depositing all of that lifetime experience into what some people call the Akashic Records. Other people may call it the Book of Life. And we are depositing those experiences because it helps the source grow, and we return to source. Of course, the wonderful thing is that if we consider source as God, and we are part of that source, we come from God, then we are, in effect, the God within. And that's a wonderful thing. And it's in the Bible. For those Christians who say, maybe that sounds like blasphemy to call yourself God. Well, no. Jesus said it in the New Testament, and it also says in the Book of Psalms, what? Know ye not that ye are gods? That's what we're here for. We've left the source, come out here to the rim, to this perception realm, to have these experiences, to take them back so that the source can grow and we can grow in it. So to me, that's a wonderful adventure. It's nothing to be afraid of.
I love that. I do think it's really important because it can be, I've heard so many different stories. I've heard stories where it felt like a dark side and a light side are kind of battling it out over you, like with your soul. And I've always kind of wondered, how do you step beyond that when you're not yet dead, but you're close?
I this whole idea of judgment and fear and the idea of God's going to get you for that, you know, or he knows when you've been sleeping, he knows when you're awake, he knows when you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. I that's just not what it is. When we go back here and we look back at our life, sure, every one of us has made mistakes. Sure, every one of us has done things we wish we hadn't or said things we wish we hadn't. That's part of the experience. And to me, I find that extremely comforting because what that means is when I'm in dark times, when I'm hurting, when I have relationship problems, or when somebody has said something to hurt me, and I find myself saying, oh, man, life is not good, I can remind myself, no, Jim, that's one of the reasons you came here. You came here to experience life, not just the good side, but the bad things, too. That's part of life. There's a two-sided coin, and we've come down here to experience it. So even in the depths of despair, I can say to myself, you know, I volunteered for this. And rather than just try to reject it and identify only with the good, I'm going to get in there and wallow around and try to understand it and try to make something positive out of it, because that's why I came in the first place.
I love that. I think if we looked at our life with more sincerity and understanding in that type of capacity, the world would be such a more peaceful space. And we need it. We need it so desperately right now.
Talk about
really
creative health.
Yeah.
There it is right there.
It is. It would change the whole... What's happening right now is really hard. It's hard to watch and hard to swallow, really.
Yeah,
and if we had more of that love leading the way, it would be such a different outcome.
I'm sure that working with the body as you have in, you know, our physical bodies, you are even more aware than me of how these bodies can store things like hate and fear. And they come out in sickness, and they come out in muscle tensions, and they come out in anxiety and panic attacks. And that, to me, is what we really have to overcome. And I think near-death experiences can help us do that, because we realize, what do we have to fear? That's another thing that people keep telling me when they come back from the other side. They said, I came back into this life, and all of a sudden I realized I'm not afraid anymore. Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful to live a life without fear, without anxiety, to live a life that is just saying, we're here for this experience. Let's experience it.
It's absolutely true. And, you know, you're right, because my studies, my books are on the muscles and how they relate to human emotion and how we carry in our bodies all of those shame, guilt, all of those things, trauma, shame, guilt, grief, where they grow roots. Body, the muscle systems that go with it, and it's all interconnected. Jim Willis, I cannot wait to have you back on this show. It's been such
Anytime.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Anytime,
thank
Emily.
You so
I'd love to come.
Good. Okay, you guys listening, make it a great week.